actually go to the restroom. But.
Yes. I must have been Commissioner Leonard. Yeah.
All right. Shame on you. I still don't think I fully understand. I think it's probably heard it somewhere between the illegal and the...
I don't want Portland to miss your introductory comments, Commissioner. Should we just start?
Okay.
All right, Commissioner Saltzman, it's we're now going to be, we're in a budget work session. It is still April 4th. Time flies. And we're going to now be hearing from the Bureau of Development Services, Commissioner Saltzman.
Well, thank you, Mayor, and members of the Council and the Budget Advisory Committee. I'm Commissioner Saltzman. And with me here is Denise Klein, the BDS Business Operations Manager. On my far right, BDS Director Paul Scarlett. And representing the Bureau's Budget Advisory Committee is Keith Skilly, and he's also on the Development Review Advisory Committee. So Denise and Paul will get into the details of the budget, so I just wanted to take a quick moment to highlight a couple of items, and we'll go from there. First off, the main request in the Bureau of Development Services budget is a one-time infusion of targeted general fund dollars that will set the stage for catching up on critical livability issues in our neighborhoods that I know all of the council is aware of. And we just had a previous discussion about some of those in terms of the quality rental inspector positions. So, and I believe that we have put together a modest request to attain the quality rental housing goal. We as a council have agreed is a priority. And I believe this is a modest request of 5.5 positions, and it's appropriate, and I hope the mayor's budget will include those, the proposed budget. Second is that our slow economic recovery is being seen in a slow and steady increase in the Bureau of Development Services number of permits and also in the fee revenue. This coupled with the increases in these fees, which are supported by the Development Review Advisory Committee and the Small Business Advisory Committee, and probably the Bureau Budget Advisory Committee as well, is allowing us to sustainably increase our staffing levels. And I want to note that we're being very careful with this process due to our conservative path forward, challenges in customer service, and being timely in our representative responsiveness remain issues. We also know that the council has recently signed off on the computer upgrade, which is referred to as ITAP, for Information Technology Advancement Project. I believe, and I think we all do, that this is a critical investment for the Bureau of Development Services sustained recovery. It is also a challenging endeavor, and whenever IT projects or information technology projects are undertaken, risk is a factor that must be taken into consideration, and I believe that we are doing that fully. And finally, I want to highlight how other Bureau budget decisions impact the Bureau of Development Services. We talked about the quality rental inspector positions in the item previous to us in the housing budget. We are concerned that there could be a cut in those two inspector positions. Also, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, their solid waste fund, is proposing to cut approximately $75,000 that pays for a nuisance inspector who focuses on residential garbage and issues and rentals without garbage service. This position is critical to the livability in Portland, and I hope that this cut is not taken. And then, with that, I'll turn it over to Paul Scarlett, and he'll run us through the budget.
Thank you, Commissioner Salzman. I am excited about this year's budget process, even though we've, over the last 2 years, experienced quite devastation with the economic downturn and the recession and the resultant layoff that the Bureau experienced in 2009 and 10. As Commissioner Salzman indicated, we are starting to see some slow, gradual recovery. And our Bureau is 90% dependent on permit fees, so it's critical, and every little difference makes a difference. And so with our budget and the decision package, which includes three decisions, the main one we're really focused on is staffing level. That's critical to the operation, it's critical to service levels, that's critical to a number of factors that goes into the development review process. Without the staff, we can't provide the level of service that our customers and their employees have come to appreciate it and expect. Those are some of the focus areas. Certainly, being financially prudent and focusing on rebuilding our reserves is also a key factor that's embedded into our budget process this year. The Bureau's minimum reserve goal is 10%, and that allows us to navigate and somewhat survive the maybe one up to two, maybe, accounting periods in good times. So it's critical that we continue to build our reserve. Our reserve is now somewhat, it's certainly dwindled. Our ultimate goal is up to 26% or so of our budget. The other part that's important is the customer service. We have historically not only provide the type of service we believe people want to have, but also have had a number of feedback and input opportunities to let us know how we're doing. And so the customer service is key, whether it's how long it would take to get a permit, when can I get it, expect an inspection, what are you doing in terms of being responsive to some of the things that the private sector is doing or innovations. And so those are key areas. Programs are also key. Prior to 12 years ago, we had pretty much one way of applying and obtaining a permit. You'd come through the door, you'd line up with everybody else, and you'd wait your turn. You hopefully, and you know, depending on the year, you would get your permit within a period of time, or it might take longer. In 1998, we introduced a facilities permit program, which allowed for a team of inspectors. You did not have to come to the Bureau of Development Services Center. The inspector would come out to your job site. A few years later, we introduced a residential version of that, and that's worked well. A few years ago, we introduced electronic permitting. You can obtain permits online. It's limited to trade permits that doesn't require plan review. So those are innovations, and those are the type of things that Development Services is exploring and working closely with our Development Review Advisory Committee and our customers. This year's budget process was very focused because with laying off up to half of our staff almost 2 years ago, and the work wasn't halved, it was only dropped by about 25%. Our finances was reduced by 50%. So that's been the dilemma and the imbalance and currently the continued focus of how do we create a better equilibrium. And out of the, I guess you could say, disaster have come a number of opportunities. I do believe we will rebuild in a much more streamlined, efficient way. It's anticipated in 5 years, the Bureau will get back to a reserve goal of 26%. In a couple of years, we should be able to pay off the loan that is required to allow us to implement the technology improvement that, which will improve our efficiencies. And so those are some of the big parts of our budget. I am thankful that we've had endorsement and participation of a number of stakeholder groups. Keith Skiller, who is a member of the Budget Advisory Committee, has participated along with others in reviewing the story. And the story is we're here to provide a service. Our mission hasn't changed. We have been hit, but we're not sitting down. We're going to keep moving forward. And we're going to be a bureau that's and that really reflects what our customer needs and what the city is all about, and we take care of business. So that's essentially what our budget process is. We'll turn it over to Denise, who can go into some of the details about what each decision package is.
Did you grab a microphone?
Thank you, Paul. So in the packet that, in the supplemental that we sent to you, we outlined our decision packages in a little bit more detail. Paul has already talked about most of them. The first one is one that would add about 13 positions, and these are in high priority service areas. When we met with all of our division managers, as Paul explained, there really is a greater need than what we've put in our budget, but this is what we can afford. So that's the 13 positions is affordable over the long term. And this will enable us to bring our level of service up. We also expect that that the economy will start, and we have seen a little bit of the start to recover, but it will be incremental and slow, but we still foresee an uptick, and we believe that work will be coming our way. So these positions are spread throughout the Bureau to assist with customer service and then also with workload. We were also asked to take a 1.5% general fund reduction, and we have put in one-third of a housing inspector position, which we are hoping that cut is not made, because as was talked about before when the Portland Housing Bureau was here and other discussions of what the need is in terms of housing and maintaining the city's housing stock. So this would make a difference in terms of that. And then the last ad package is one that Commissioner Saltzman talked about, which is a request from the general fund for 5.5 positions, and is very targeted into our programs that already have general fund support, land use services, and the noise control program. And we're also asking for some funds for the sign program and also the neighborhood inspections housing program. So this would, again, help with assisting in terms of workload. We're asking for one-time funds because what we're trying to do is ensure that we can continue the funding of this with our own funds in the subsequent fiscal year. So the way that we looked at this was we were trying not to ask for ongoing general fund, but rather ask for one time. So this would be a one-time request from general fund, and then our financial plan shows that we actually can afford these positions in subsequent years. The final two items that have already been discussed by Commissioner Saltzman were the other ad packages that impact our Bureau, and you've already had a lot of discussion about the Portland Housing Bureau and the discontinuance of the Community Development Block Grant funds. And then also the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability funds a program in our neighborhood inspections program, which is in regards to illegal dumping. This has been funded from the Refuse Disposal Fund since back in 1991, and this was a proposal to reduce the funding of this. I believe that the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, I think that they would certainly like to continue the funding, but because of other demands on the funding, they are proposing that be reduced. So we're requesting that either that continue with that funding source or that the money be funded from the general fund to cover that. So that concludes all of our issues.
Keith, did you want to add any?
Sure. Just as a member of the Development Review Advisory Committee and the Budget Advisory Committee, I'd like to commend the Bureau for their work in putting together a plan that is both forward-looking and recognizes the realities of where we are today. I think the plan, their requested ad packages, provide a much-needed additional level of support for inspections and for the public services that the Bureau has, as well as it recognizes their ongoing mission, which is to support and enforce the state laws as far as building permits, and they're making sure that things are built according to code. So, that's just,
thank you.
No, I just wanted to, in conclusion, to thank Commissioner Leonard, who's not here today, but has led the Bureau for 8 years, I believe, and through good times and, unfortunately, most recently through bad times. But he has been an effective commissioner in charge. And I think, as Paul said, it's, you know, morale is an important issue at this agency at this particular point in history. Over the last 2 years, the staff has been reduced by almost 50%. And that's maybe more than 50%. So it's had a real impact on the ability to deliver workload, but also on agency morale. So I wanted to thank Commissioner Leonard and the team leadership for their efforts.
If I could really add real quickly, it's been about a month since Commissioner Salzman's inherited the Bureau, and I want to let everyone know it's going really well. Transition's been great.
Great. So thank you. So I have a question about high cost activities and relatively low benefit. So are there things in the Bureau that either you can show are expensive services, programs that are expensive to provide, but have a low benefit to safety or health or, you know, community priorities? And have you already sort of wrung those out of the system you have?
I believe so. We took a very extensive look at our operation 2 years ago. We established a restructuring team led by Hank McDonald and looked at all of the services we provided in context with our authority and the mission, as well as code requirements. And those that are obligation or statutory requirements, certainly we put in one bin. Others where maybe it's sort of a good thing but not a requirement. And we have streamlined our operation, and I believe we have now a pretty tight set of services and functions that connects with the question you're asking, Mayor, where I don't believe there are services that aren't necessary. We are looking additionally, the ones that are being provided, are we recovering costs? Are there opportunities to increase the fees at which they're being provided? And so that's something that's being explored and being incorporated into the budget. The fee portion of our budget is sort of separate but together, and that will be presented in May. We're currently going out and meeting with industry groups such as the Plumbing Association and Electrical Association and talking about the fee increases, which is now at 8%, but also looking individually where services being provided, where the cost is not being recovered, and seeing if we can increase those at a rate that's necessary, maybe even gradual over a period of time. So I believe we now have a more streamlined Bureau than we did a couple of years ago.
My sort of the follow-up to that, I appreciate that, is around professional services, people that have stamps and have to carry liability insurance. Have we gotten out of the business where appropriate of, you know, inspecting or plans review of professional service certified folks who are actually liable?
We've incorporated and implemented some of those. For example, in the new single-family plans, we're not. If you sign, there is an option to sign a waiver to. If you put your stamp on it, we won't re-review it. And a couple of months ago, at the Development Review Advisory Committee, Keith is smiling because he will remember this. He does remember where we're looking at. For example, there are some other opportunities, and should we be exploring special inspections, for example, third party, if they provide their stamp, is that good enough? We're open to those and haven't come to any definitive decisions, but the conversation is ongoing and exploration is part of that.
Keith, do you have any thoughts?
I'd say that it's a topic that is going to receive a lot more discussion going forward. It is a self-certification program by design professionals is something that DRAC is very supportive of. There are some issues with reviews and state laws that we need to kind of work with as we understand it. So moving forward, I think we hope to see some movement, getting a little bit more autonomy and actually leaving some of the review on staff. But it's a topic
for example, in the realm of sidewalks,
yes,
many of them have to be engineered, have to be stamped, and then, so this is a question for my bureau, but part of the big team, then they have to be reviewed and stamped again by one of our folks. So it sounds like you piloted an effort, and I'm not sure both those stamps are necessarily useful. It's one of my bureaus,
yeah. And
it sounds like you've piloted if an engineer says, waiver, this is good to go,
yeah. It's
installed, there's an inspection at the end,
right.
and it's not good, and it's legitimate, and they have to rip it out, but otherwise, it's good to go.
Mm-hmm.
Are we, if I was to ask your fresh, bright, shiny new commissioner in charge to work with you and come up with 10 examples of those, doesn't have to be strictly in Bureau Development Services, it could be in transportation or some others, I would like to make that request. I just want to see some more incremental improvement. We can decide
yes. As
a council in the end, ooh, you're pushing us too hard, too fast, yeah. But I'd like you to come up with those,
sure.
Even if they're not strictly in your bureau, but within the constellation of permitting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some interfacing opportunities between bureaus as part of the
look at my bureaus.
Yes, we will. Because the sidewalk and driveway stuff comes up a lot.
Yeah.
A couple of questions and a couple comments and a question. It doesn't seem reasonable to me to ask BDS and permit payers to absorb the fees for tree inspections and housing inspections. So I just put state out there that I don't agree with the FPD recommendation on those. And then following up on that, to me, it's more important to get those staff hired back to be able to do the permits at the counter than it is to build up the reserves at this time. I'd, speaking as one council member, be willing to vote for, if you have to come back to us to say that you need another float or whatever, to me, it's more important to have the staff hired than it is to be building up that reserve again.
Right.
So then my question is, what are you going to do about sign inspections? Because it seems like that's one that we could easily recoup in fines the cost of having more staff.
We have a program that's being developed. Mike Leafill is assigned to that, and we've actually been working with the sign industry as well. So it's a private sector partnership possibility, as well as can we introduce or change code language to allow us to impose higher penalties to recoup our costs on signed penalties. So that's
quickly,
that's underway.
How quickly can you have that come to us?
Mike? No, pretty soon. I think next couple of weeks. We have a draft already.
Thank you very much.
Mayor, I have sure. A couple of questions.
For sure.
Paul, on the question of the reserve.
Yes.
Is it your intention as you build up the reserve to build in a trigger, or does a trigger already exist so that if in some future downturn you're required to draw down on the reserve to maintain current operations, the council would get an sort of early warning sign of that so that we could participate in some of those hard decisions?
Yes. Part of the – it's almost the opposite of that. We have, as part of our new revised model in terms of projections, have indicators that would – present to us early signs that activities in the construction industry slowing. And to that end, you'd have sort of a precursor that tells you we need to slow things down here. And also, if we dip into a reserve, to what level do we want to dip into prior to making decisions about taking cost-cutting measures?
And my hope is that in your policy, there's a specific mechanism that triggers council review or notification of an event or series of events that cause you to draw down on the reserve, since the ultimate backstop could be a request for general fund support.
That's something Commissioner Salzman and I will need to discuss. But it's...
Well, I just wanted to mention on this issue, but when we had the discussions about the information technology, I guess it was last year at this time, we talked about the need for our forecasting model to have more real estate sensitive variables, or have some more real estate commercial and residential variables, and those are now part of the forecast model too, which should help us get a better track on revenues and decline in revenues.
Okay, thank you. And secondly, Paul, the on decision package, excuse me, ad package 2, which is the roughly $670,000 to fund 5.5 positions in neighborhood inspection, your request is coupled with a projection that you think a year from now you'll have enough revenue to cover those positions. But if not, then you'd be looking at the possibility of laying those people off?
Well, I would clarify being able to support the position. Currently, our general fund program positions are funded by about 25% general fund. So inherent with that would be an expectation general fund continue through the next fiscal year. So if we were to get, say, 25% in addition to the projected increase in growth activity, then we would be able to continue to support the 5.5 positions. And it's land use and neighborhood inspections and some other programs.
But worst case scenario, if you didn't see the recovery that you're projecting, it would be either back here next year asking for an extension of one time, and or you'd be faced with some tough decision about laying off those folks?
That's correct. It actually could function as a one time only, or some reduction from 5 to 3 or whatever the right amount might be.
Thank you.
And Paul, I just want to clarify. So were you just saying of the 670,000 ad package, you would expect about 25% of that to be ongoing into future years?
Denise, is that correct? Or?
No, it's the I think what Paul was alluding to was that there is general fund in our current budget. And so we're assuming that the general fund that we have currently and that's projected for next fiscal year, we're assuming that would continue. But this $650,000 is truly one-time general fund. So it was the what we have currently, not
new ones.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks.
Okay, we're out of time. Are there any? Yep.
I just wanted to ask real quick about the the new tree code, and how is that impacting you? And I noticed it was mentioned in the budget, but not in your packages.
We oftentimes for different bureaus have interagency agreements, mm-hmm. And so we would, because of our authority to review development review activities, we would review on the part of Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and so that bureau would assist in the funding of this position. We would do the work; somebody else would assist funding it.
So it's planning on being the code is going to be implemented in the coming year.
There, as part of the tree code, which comes back to council, I believe, on Wednesday, part of the proposal is to have some early sort of research compilation of work, not necessarily get a program developed. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of minimal work at first.
Mr. Scarlett, one question. Yes. Instead of adding 5 FTEs, why couldn't you not have some extra overtime? It'd certainly be less than $670,000, and you wouldn't have the fixed overhead. And you'd give you time for the revenues to show up, and then you could go ahead and...
We've looked at that. There's a unique balance between how much work there is and how much a staff can do before you get to a burnout stage and what's efficient. Mm-hmm. And so there is a lot of work out there. We've determined it's more feasible to add positions rather than to increase overtime. There's a point where it's a delicate balance, and it impacts morale. Currently, we're less than half the staff, and you're asking people to do more than they're capable of doing. So at some point, you need to bring in more resources.
So you'll show us the calculation that you used, or whatever the decision points were in calculation used to make the proposal that is in front of us. So going back through the to-dos, I didn't ask it, but add it to the list of turnaround times, just a snapshot of turnaround times. I know you have it.
Yes.
I would still like you to go through code requirements that are expensive for us. Mm-hmm. So as opposed to squeezing out inefficiencies in your operation, underline code requirements that are expensive, maybe well-intentioned, but do not have a lot of public benefit, so that we can, that is separate from, and you can come up with the top 10, that's separate from the restamping, okay, the double stamping of professional liabilities, professional firms, so the top 10 there. We have the issue of tree inspections and who to pay for. We have the issue of reserves versus employees, reporting triggers. Just get more information on that. Add FTEs versus overtime, the decision points and calculations. And then could you send me a report on the experiment we did on ADUs where we reduced, you're the most germane bureau to ask this of, where we reduced, eliminated SDCs and what has happened with ADUs.
Yes, accessory dwelling units.
And right. What's that?
Yes. Accessory dwelling units?
Yes, accessory. Right. Granny flats.
We saw an increase, so we'll get you what's happening with that.
And then in the spirit of that, in your forecast, because you've gotten a lot more sophisticated, I think I can ask this question and you can answer it in a reasonably informed way. Are there other building or development activities a la ADUs that are not happening that if we were to incent them with lower SDCs, mm-hmm, we would actually see an uptick in building bureau, you know, permit revenue? Yes. So we're not, I don't want to cannibalize your forecast. It's intended to be, is there a certain kind of remodel? Is there a certain kind of, you know, keeping our folks working as much as possible without cannibalizing ourselves because we wouldn't get these SDCs anyway, kind of thing. And I'm open to, you know, two or three of those ideas.
Okay, we can do that.
Anything else? All right, we have a 4-minute break to do the switch.
Oh, yeah.
You don't
show your
happy to experiment.
Yeah. I'm all over that. I got two of them for the list right now.
Oh, you didn't help us.
I didn't.
Yes, thank you. Pleasure meeting you.
Well, I look at this and I think if I were to go to my boss in the private sector with a 10% increase in salary, in an environment where the best prediction for the economy recovery is 2013, and I'm seeing more, I'd be laughed at. So, and the average cost is 100.
Is any different?
I did a quick
how this is run this year versus the last year.
Right, right. And I just wondered if that's normal.
Keep approved ideas about streamlining their operations. So why didn't they do that last year? Or the year before. Oh, I'm just being a jerk.
You know, last year, when they presented. No, I know. I totally understand.
I mean, I think all the way around.
Let me come on. I can't hear.
Yeah, you know, it's like
I was getting it. I was asking the question about turning the house in
last year, but it's interesting.
So, clearly, both of those.
Oh, really?
Oh,
that's interesting.
Same with caffeine.
Yeah. Huh.
And I don't know what it does. And
you had to, like,
I just think you can chip it later.
Sure.
Yeah. And I get maybe
in
my darndest
this
year.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's which is sort of a normal routine now, right?
No, no.
Child's great.
Well, with last night's so, I really
yeah, you know, you got my back.
Yeah, I like that.
So, policy-wise,
so I haven't done this back as much.
I looked through a decision.
You weren't prepared for that.
No, which, I mean, I was, but, you know.
Right.
But you know that they'll just be, it'll be
like, be nice to right behind you and have your back.
It's fine.
It's not a board.
That would be a bummer.
I'm sorry that I didn't email because we receive all of these materials.
Yes.
That they were better going on with this previous meeting. May not have.
That'd be great. Yeah, I've only been here since January 2000. I moved here to Annapolis, Maryland, because I've been coming here.
Yeah, it's a great place.
Well, I retired and my wife retired, and we could have gone anywhere. Yeah. And I was even working in downtown D.C. I've been shocked at the and I wonder if you took all of those.
So, in.
Well, there's only speculation. A couple of summers ago, there was again speculation. I'm not sure anybody ever really did that. It's pretty hard. By analytics. I think it's a.
And that's what my wife did, so.
And then on top of that, layer is kind of like this.
Well, we'll see what happens on Wednesday. This is, it's happened before. We schedule for Wednesday afternoon time, and everything gets put into the morning session. And if there are any controversial issues, I could just say there are. So, I mean, it's a real guess. I think it's done about 1:30.
Exactly.
I hadn't read it.
And so there's, I mean, I think it's easy. Really? And of course, it's
you know, I called PD and they said that they recommend people to buy.
All right. It is still Monday, April 4th. It is now 2:30-ish, and we're going to have the budget work session, our time focused on the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. It is still my honor to be the commissioner in charge of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, a bureau that taught me how to be a citizen of Portland and now is helping me become be a commissioner in the city of Portland. I'm not going to go through our whole template or a lot of our successes this year. I want us to focus mostly on our requests because I think that's really what I'd like to explain to the council, unless you have particular issues you'd like me to go through first. We are continuing to be fiscally responsible and restrained during the recession. We have had a Bureau Advisory, Budget Advisory Committee process again, which I am hugely proud of. Both the last 2 years, we had 50-some people participating in twice-monthly meetings for 3 hours each and had lots of participation in figuring out how to cut. This year, we had
and
one
you're
meeting.
Not, I'm not sure you're on your mic'd up. Oh, yes, you are. Excuse me.
That one as well?
Yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Last year and the year before, we had months of meetings with 50-some people spending hundreds of hours collectively figuring out how to make cuts in the most ethical and judicious manner. This year, we had one meeting to decide on which piece to offer as our cut, and then I've been asking the Budget Advisory Committee to focus on, now that we've cut beyond the bone, how would we grow if we have more resources either this year or in the years to come? So that's been our process for the Budget Advisory Committee this year. The Budget Advisory Committee is still meeting. One of the big issues is how to manage and staff and locate the crime prevention program, which, as you know, is currently has staff located all over, in neighborhoods all over the city, and Stephanie Reynolds to my right, who is the manager. We have held open the position that was previously occupied by Kelly Ball before she was cruelly snatched away by the Office of Management and Finance. We've kept it open, looking at how could we reorganize crime prevention in a manner that would allow Stephanie to be able to supervise staff who are all over the city. We're not at a decision-making point with that yet. Our community partners have to be part of making those decisions as far as whether we co-locate crime prevention and how we would still provide services in neighborhoods if we did that. But it is something that we want to keep on the table. And so as with the first ad package that I'm asking for is to not take the cut to the crime prevention position, assistant position. If we do keep the crime prevention services as currently being provided, it's essential to have somebody like Kelly performed the services that Kelly performed to help Stephanie to be able to manage services to 95 neighborhoods. If we're able to co-locate, we would use that money to fund the system. So we wouldn't be asking for more money if we decide to change it, if we are able to get that first position back again. So that's our first question, our first request. And I will note that on your decision package, my total requests, and I think this is almost my total request for all my bureaus, is $222,422. So, well, I'd be happy to outline for you exactly what those $22 are for. As you all know, ONI services are a very cost-effective way to get lots and lots of volunteer services, and that is evidenced in our expanded graffiti program, which is another of our asks. The mayor and I put in the winter bump to start this year expanded services for graffiti so that we can continue to leverage more volunteers. We've tripled the number of volunteers who are engaged in graffiti programs this year. It still ranks low on our bureau's budget priority list because it's seen as a service to the whole city rather than as key to citizen engagement. I'm hoping that as people realize how fun it is to get together and take graffiti off and keep it off and really take ownership of the physical space in their neighborhoods, that it will become to be seen more as a core program of ONI. But we're not quite there yet, and that's why it ranks low, but it's certainly a key to the city as a whole. And then the other program, which you'll probably be hearing more about from in emails from citizens, is to restore the small grants funding. We heard one example of how the small grant funding is used in neighborhoods when we had both the East Portland Action Plan small grants and the East Portland and North Portland neighborhood grants discussed at council over the past few weeks. Again, a relatively small amount of money creates huge benefits and indeed huge amounts of funding that's leveraged through those small grants. So that's our other request.
So I have to depart for a meeting at the Oregon Department of Transportation here in a minute, but I wanted to throw out an idea to think about. And it's, I don't think it's has a fiscal impact, but it might have a joint staffing impact. And that is, I'm interested in your thoughts and the thoughts of the neighborhoods on potentially between fire, police, 911, ONI crime prevention, and the Portland Office of Emergency Management to combine our citizen outreach and organizing efforts. We currently don't have POM and the NET team, so this would also be inclusive of the NET team. They're not obviously exactly the five sort of service areas of the city have different missions, but they're all around public safety, some in the event of a disaster, some in the event of a fire, crime, and the such. So I'm not talking about any particular structural reorganization, but I'd welcome your thoughts and Oney's thoughts on, all right, we've got 90-some neighborhood associations, and if we staff them from better staffed those meetings, are there coalition meetings using sort of dividing them up and someone who's there from fire can represent what's going on in POEM and the NET team and everything else. Someone else could be from the police bureau and talk about any issues with 911 or fire or calls for service. Obviously, it's a half-baked idea, but I'd, through the budget process, I'd like to put it on the table to see if it has wings.
We certainly like that idea. We have talked about increased partnership with POEM as a result of the report that came at the end of last year, and in particular the neighborhood emergency teams. Your police bureau have historically done a great job of coming to neighborhood meetings and helping people know what's going on. So we would certainly appreciate that. I should have mentioned at the beginning that Amalia Alacrandamaris, the director, is not able to be here today. She's sick. And I wanted to pass to Stephanie to comment on that question that you just made, and also maybe to give you just a little more background about why the assistant crime prevention manager position is important to us.
Well, Mayor, thank you. I think that's a really interesting idea. And informally, I think that already happens, if I'm understanding your suggestion. When we go to neighborhood meetings, we're often asked questions about other aspects of the city's public safety services. And to the extent that we can, we do answer those questions. We understand certain aspects of the role of the police with respect to the neighborhoods very well, and so we often sort of speak for them as appropriate. So if that's what you have in mind, sort of an expansion of that or a formalizing of that, I think that would be
a good idea. I'm very impressed with the caliber of crime prevention folks we have, so I want to kind of build on that strength. I think they're overworked sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
At least maybe I'm overworking them too much. and I guess it's out of some neighborhood associations have public safety teams, some public safety committees, and others don't. And maybe that's all right. So I kind of want to know, if we had more public safety committees, would the city be better off? And what do we need to for the public safety committees to feel staffed? I don't think our crime prevention folks could go to 97 meetings, but maybe they could. And then we also have business districts around public safety. So it's sort of like, I just want your ideas around how could we have, not just in times of crisis, but keeping the peace, times of keeping the peace, how could we use this collection of efforts to informally, but more thoughtfully maybe, share the task? Mm-hmm. Something like that.
I think that's a great idea. There are public safety committees at the coalition level in most of the coalitions in the city, but it's not uniform, and it would be great to sort of make that more robust. I think that would be great.
I apologize. I'm going to turn it over to Commissioner Saltzman. But I will take the recognition. Sorry. Thank you, Amanda.
Commissioner Fish, you're recognized.
Thank you. On the question of crime control and SEPTED, I visited a new development in Southeast the other day that Rob Justice and a group of people have done. And he was highly complimentary, laudatory of the team that came in and gave them some feedback as to how to incorporate SEPTED principles, which just in plain English means kinds of the design elements in a development which put more eyes in public areas and create a safer place for people to live and to play. And one of the questions I have, given that we have these very talented, experienced people in SEPTED, are we migrating their skills across bureaus as effectively as we could, or do you have some thoughts as to how we can perhaps more fully integrate the SEPTED work that the crime control people do across bureaus?
I have a lot of thoughts about that. Yeah, I mean... there could be a lot more integration of SEPTED ideas through the work of other bureaus. Ultimately, I'd love it if every single building that was built or remodeled in the city of Portland, that SEPTED was taken into consideration when that was done.
And I guess because there is likely to be a lot of work done by at least three bureaus, BDS, fire, and housing, around neighborhood inspections generally, and you know how we keep units regularly inspected and safe.
it seems to me we're going to want you at the table to help us think creatively about a situation. Let's say we find a bad actor who doesn't have a lot of resources, but you come in and say, you know, if you reconfigured where the manager's office is, if you made an investment in lights, because lighting is obviously very important, and those kinds of things, you actually may have a safer place in addition to addressing the life safety issues, that we could kill two birds with one stone. So I'd like to find a way to more dynamically integrate that work in the work that we're going to be doing.
Thank you.
First of all, did you have a budget advisory committee person you wanted to have speak?
Or? We didn't. Thank you.
I just saw Linda sitting back there, and I figured sure.
Well, we've got a bunch of folks.
I figured she was on your budget advisory committee, but that's all right. That's your discretion. So I guess I walked in a minute late, but the issue of co-locating crime prevention coordinators. So currently they're located at the 7 coalition district.
They're in different places. Go ahead and talk.
We have 8 different offices, if you include my office at City Hall, so 7 different community-based offices. Some of them are in coalition offices. Some of them are in police contact offices.
Oh, right.
One's in a HAP property. So it's a combination of donated office space that we have right now.
So when you're saying that you believe that would increase the efficiency, mm-hmm. That perspective shared by coalitions or...
We're in the process of finding that out. We've been talking about this. We've talked about it a couple of times at the back. All of the coalitions are taking it out to their boards to find out how they feel about it. We're generally getting a lot of support for the idea. Right now, we don't pay any rent on any of our office spaces except for the one in City Hall. And while that seems great, it's actually not, because free office space is often very unstable, and we have to move people around a lot. Which I think is very distracting and time-consuming. So I'd like to remove that distraction by having everybody in one stable spot with a long-term lease where I can start every morning seeing everybody and seeing how they're doing. And
so. Okay.
It's fair to say that while there is a lot of support in the community, there's also a lot of skepticism and some outright resistance. So we're not at the point yet that we're ready to... I have authorized Stephanie and the group to go out to the neighborhoods and ask the questions. I'm not yet convinced it's the best thing to do. So we want to maintain the flexibility by having this in the budget. Because part of what we're trying to do or are doing in ONI is assisting other bureaus with multiple projects. Commissioner Fish mentioned about community design projects, but we're helping with the mediation program, which both mediation and graffiti eventually should go back into ongoing funding. But with the mediation facilitation, I think most members of the council have experienced Resolutions Northwest's help in facilitating big community meetings. Judith Mary with the Restorative Listening Project has been helping with multiple very difficult issues, a lot of them in development services with neighborhood complaints. We're helping the mayor with the last Thursday process and managing that major community event that happens every month. So there's a number of things that we do that support other bureaus that perhaps don't show up in our line item budget, but we feel add value to how the city does things.
Mm-hmm. Could I follow up on that just to get a clarification, Commissioner Fritz? I have watched the folks from Resolutions Northwest operate in very hot settings, and I've been incredibly impressed with the way they manage public process, build trust, engage people. And one of the challenges we have is that if a bureau uses someone who's a staff person to do community outreach, by definition, they are seen as wedded to the bureau's position. You can't perform that function and be seen as other. Even if you are truly neutral on the subject, you're just seen as an extension of the bureau often. Whereas when Resolutions Northwest comes in, the folks who do the facilitation, I think, are generally seen as very neutral. And I've watched some of the talented people over there navigate very, very hot rooms. And so the question I have, just would you remind me, when we call upon those services, how does that service get paid?
Michael, can you help us with that? Come up. Okay.
Who pays for it, and how does that get accounted for?
I'm Brian Hoop, manager of the Civic Engagement Programs Neighborhood Resource Center. So our contract with Resolutions Northwest, aside from their long-term relationship with the city of training volunteers to do neighbor-to-neighbor mediation. Several years ago, they expanded those services to start providing facilitation of mostly focused at this point right now on neighborhood business association or partner organizations that work closely with ONI. So that's why I think maybe you're seeing them more out in the community, because usually it's because they've been brought in through a neighborhood association problem-solving issue, perhaps maybe with another bureau. But I have noticed we are getting calls from other bureaus saying, we've seen these folks in action. How could we utilize their services? At this point in time, you know, my understanding is we have to say, well, officially you would need to engage with them in a IGA or, I mean, a contractual relationship. So correct me if I'm wrong, Betsy, but Betsy Coddington is a director of Resolutions Northwest, but it's my understanding that, you know, at this time that ONI's contract with them is not meant to be providing services that are specifically for a bureau-specific project.
So it's different. It depends what it's for. I know when I was in charge of the Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management, we arranged for Resolutions Northwest staff to help us with some of the neighborhood meetings about the wireless antennas in the neighborhood, and that was a specific contract with Resolutions Northwest. This is Betsy Coddington from Resolutions Northwest.
Brian is correct that under our contract, we serve coalitions, neighborhood associations, but other bureaus, unless they can make a case for it falling under the ONI contract, we charge.
And there's a pre-existing contractual arrangement that's been established so that any bureau can contract with you under a standard agreement?
We don't have a contract with all bureaus, no.
But are there standard terms that any bureau can... do you have a standard agreement that you use with bureaus?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So I don't think we are going to have any one-time money, which will be converted into ongoing. When I put in my bureau commissioner requests, I was hoping that we would have one. If there was one thing that we could take from one-time shadow budget to put it into ongoing, it would be Resolutions Northwest, just because it's such an important function that does serve all of the bureaus, I believe, in the whole city.
Any other questions, committee members?
Okay. There's just the one other question that the mayor usually asks or has been asking, which is about if we had one-time money for technology service, what would that be? So I want to put down a marker that we should be looking towards a 311 system over the next few years, not even starting to fund it this year, but it's clear to me, having been in charge of both the 911 system and the Office of Neighborhood Involvement with its wonderful 823-4000 number, which people can call to find out any city, county, PDC information, that we do, it would be helpful to have a 311 system where people could call and get their Water Bureau questions answered or whatever. That is something that we're going to be having to look to plan for over several years, but I believe it's something we should start planning for.
Okay.
I did want to ask one thing. I was reading through the Office of Management and Budget analysis, and it was talking about the graffiti abatement and actually recommending it against it because of some measurement issues. And I was wondering if you could speak to that and just what, because I know that that's a program that has a high impact in East Portland. So I would like to speak in favor of it, but I also wanted to find out more about what that was.
Good. Perhaps ask the OMF analyst, Kezia.
Kezia Warner, Management and Finance, Financial Planning Division. And the information that you are reading is actually the trend analysis that I got from both Office of Neighborhood Involvement and the Police Bureau. And the information was conflicting. The Police Bureau's information shows trends of declining incidents of graffiti, and then ONI, conversely, is showing increases. And so I think there needs to be a longer period of time of gathering that data, and you have implemented some new systems for tracking the data ONI has. So I think for a longer duration, we may see that bear out, but at this point, the information that's coming from the two bureaus does conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, it is a program that also it's been funded with one-time resources, and it's an ongoing program, so that's another issue that council really needs to be considering is is this a program that should be receiving resources and raises to a level of dedicating general fund to it on an ongoing basis?
Well, the FPD issue says that you didn't recommend it because this is one of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement's lowest priority